Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and I'd like to ask you, have you ever been censored? I mean, really shut down? Heaven forbid you should speak your mind or even have it interpreted correctly. Well, it's an old story, and if you haven't been, just wait, because it's common, and it started a long time ago, and there's a great book about it, and we're going to be interviewing the author of a new book called Censoring God, The Ultimate Censorship, and I'm so excited because he's been on the show a number of times before, and I love talking with Jim Willis. Jim, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. Good to be with you. Good to be with you.
This is some book you've written. And,
thank you.
I haven't had the time to, I want to sink my teeth into it even deeper because there's so much wonderful information about our history, long history, thousands of years ago, when God was censored. And maybe God is still being censored every day.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I was glad to have written this book because I was born right in the middle of two of the greatest archaeological discoveries in the history of biblical archaeology. I was born in 1946. And in 1945, there was a tremendous discovery in the Egyptian desert of the Nag Hammadi scrolls, which were books that didn't make the New Testament, largely because they were Gnostic in nature, and the Gnostics were being put down by the Roman government, really, who was using religion for a reason. So that was.
But that also, the word Gnostic means they were smart.
Knowledge. That's right. So that discovery happened in 45. I was born in 46, and in 47, the first of the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, and of course they contained a lot of the Old Testament texts or texts that didn't make the Old Testament cut. And I have to say, maybe because of the accident of my birth, I was always the smart aleck in Sunday school who always had the questions to ask that stumped the teacher and that kind of thing. But when I first started going to seminary in 71, 72, I began to study biblical history and biblical archaeology and the history behind how the Bible was written and who wrote the Bible and how it was put together. So I've been studying this, for 50 years, I guess now. And I was finally able to write the book that I've always wanted to write about it. That's what Censoring God is all about.
Oh, we need it. I think it's really important for us in our current time to understand the nature of life, meaning that it's not only controversial, that there are forces at work who really don't want us to know what's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So forces at work that are very probably not of our material existence too. One of the things that this book has taught me is that metaphysical or supernatural are not words that just refer to some kind of woo-woo new age stuff. We're discovering through the intricate equations of quantum physics, for instance, of the nature of reality. And it's quite a bit different than we've been taught. We're living in basically an illusion. One of my favorite songs is turning out to be Row, Row, Row Your Boat Gently Down the Stream. Merrily, merrily, life is but a dream. There are forces at work that are beyond our understanding, and we're a part of that. And one of the things that really has bothered me, especially all the time I was studying Censoring God, the material for Censoring God, is that so often, not only do people not understand how we got the Bible, but they're using it in ways that the original authors of the Bible never intended it to be used. The Bible was never intended to be a club to hit someone over the head and say, this is my way or the highway, but that's how it's being used so often nowadays. It's really, the Bible was even born in controversy. It's much more of a political document than people understand. Constantine, who was the first Christian emperor, and whether he was ever really a Christian or not, that's up for grabs. The historians are still fighting about that. No doubt his mother was, but whether he was or not is still up for grabs. But Constantine found himself the head of this far-flung, immense empire, and he had to unify it somehow. Different languages, different customs, different belief systems. And so one of the ways he used to unify it is not only the Roman infrastructure, the roads and the armies and the Pax Romana and all of that. One of the ways he tried to bring them together was through religion. And so that's why he formed these committees, basically, that met in places like Hippo and Istanbul and Carthage and places like that, just to put together a document that everybody could agree on. And the trouble with that is that there were many different Christian sects at this time. Christianity was nowhere near the monolith that it is right now. And so, for instance, there was a group of Christians down in Egypt who were called Gnostics. And one of their principal teachings was that everybody had access to spirit. Everybody had access to God. You didn't need anybody to stand between you and God. Well, that didn't fit with Constantine's great plan. He wanted to use religion to say, yeah, you do need somebody. We're going to tell you what to do. And so he persecuted the Gnostic Christians. He ordered all of their texts destroyed. None of them made it into the current Bible that we have, with a possible exception of the Gospel of John has some Gnostic tendencies. And he ordered all of their literature destroyed. And thank goodness there were some far-seeing Gnostic priests living outside of Nag Hammadi who refused to burn their documents, and instead they buried them in the desert. And there they sat. Nobody knew they were there. We would have never known about these Gospels, for instance, the Gospel of Thomas or the Gospel of Mary. And we wouldn't have known about any of those Gnostic texts had they not been discovered in 1945. It's an amazing story.
There was so much that was written at the time politically,
yeah,
to create a structure of mm-hmm. control and authority,
yeah,
rather than that we are the authority, and that, in other words, our spirit is, and
yeah,
our spirit can be expansive and can be creative and original in ways that they didn't want us to be. So they the authorities that would shut us down, and through centuries and centuries, they just kept on killing off all of the philosophers
it's been a story that has been well known to academic scholars who study Christianity and Christian history, but the people in the pew just don't realize how much the Bible has been used as a political document during the Inquisition, for instance, or during the Spanish Inquisition, and how people were declared heretics. Galileo, for instance, placed under house arrest for his whole life. And it's not just old. It's happening today. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I have a tendency to interrupt.
No, that's okay. I get passionate about this stuff. People think this is just old time stuff, that the Spanish Inquisition it's something in the past. We don't have to think about that nowadays. Actually, the church telling people how to believe and how to keep people from God if they didn't believe in the right way. But this is a very new thing. We have a president right now, the second Roman Catholic president who's ever been elected in American history, who on a personal level very much goes along with his religion's idea on abortion rights, for instance. He personally is opposed to abortion, as most good Roman Catholics are. But he never has wanted to impose his own will upon other people. And so his voting record in the past has been to reflect more the people of his district who may have different ideas than him. So as a result, his voting record is, pro things like, Roe versus Wade and things like that. Well, a couple of months ago, the Roman Catholic bishops here in the United States met, and a conservative group actually wanted to withhold communion from the president because of his past voting record, which is not anti-abortion. And so what they did was they said, well, we don't want to give him communion. Now, it was never going to happen because the Pope didn't go along with it, and you have to have a two-thirds majority and plus the authority of the Pope. But even still, there was an example of a religious establishment in the Roman Catholic Church who was trying to say, listen, communion is, according to in Roman Catholic theology, is an avenue to God. And so they were trying to say, we are going to take away your avenue to God because of your political beliefs. So it didn't happen, but they were threatening it. And so I think we make a mistake when we look at all this stuff and we say, well, it was all in the past. It doesn't count nowadays. It's still going on, very much so.
Well, there
and it's not just the Roman Catholic. I mean, obviously the evangelical church in America is very big right now too. And ever since the moral majority began back in the 70s, Jerry Falwell's moral majority, using religion as a kind of a club to keep people in line politically, it's still going on.
Well, I look at a great sage of the past named Maimonides, and in the Jewish religion.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he do? He created more rules of order and behavior. And now the Jewish scholars of today, what they're scholarly about is how well are we following the rules? And it's so limiting. I spoke to an advanced rabbi who explained it to me, that this isn't what it, that Jews should be examining the nature of God and themselves within God, mm-hmm. rather than what rules they should follow every day to make sure that God doesn't harm them.
On my YouTube page, I have a number of different YouTube videos that I have up there, and one of them is called "The One Ring to Rule Them All." I didn't make up that title, by the way; I stole it. But the idea is that of that video is that at the base of every single religion, there is a founder, or in the case of Hinduism, many founders, who had a shamanic experience, a breakthrough into a new understanding of the reality of what they called God. And that breakthrough, that look, glance through the window to see the other side, that was the essence of the religion at the beginning, whether it's Christianity or Judaism or Islam, Hinduism, Muslim, Buddhism. That shamanic experience was at the beginning, and that was what started the whole thing. Then, after the founder was gone, then came the followers, who did exactly as you just said. They put the rules in place. They built the gates. They built the fences, and they said, "You are all sheep who must stay inside the fold." You know, that kind of thing. And it's a real tragedy.
But now I'm seeing it in politics, I'm seeing in political parties, others, and it feels like tribalism.
Oh yeah, exactly.
And you have to do what the tribe tells you to do.
Yeah. I like to look at Christianity, for instance, is divided into many different denominations, not only Catholic and Protestant, but Methodists and Baptists and Episcopalians and all this kind of thing, all different denominations. Each one is a little bit different, but saying we have the truth. This is the way to do it. And now I'm seeing denominationalism in politics. In both parties, you have to toe the line and make sure that you're following the doctrines and the dogmas. I'm seeing it in historical studies. I'm seeing it in archaeology. I'm seeing it all over in science, for instance. And the bitter rhetoric that is being used to put down people. If you don't like somebody's ideas, you attack their character or you right. call them names. And, oh, I think it's an absolute tragedy.
And we're seeing that in the field of medicine.
Oh, sure.
There's so much ugliness about people who are speaking their truths and aren't allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
And why not? Why can't we hear everybody and feel what's right for ourselves if we listen to reason and open discussion? But mm-hmm. that doesn't seem to be allowed. So
no, people don't seem to have the idea that you can disagree and still be friends. You can disagree and still be family. You can disagree and still have good relationships. That's gone. That's gone now.
But it's fear that's doing
it. Oh, sure. Absolutely. That's the root of it right there.
Outside of the box.
Because
I'm being told that I should be afraid of so much. So don't tell me, don't threaten my fear, please.
Yes. Well, you know, that's it. When you turn, you know, my wife and I don't have a TV anymore. All we do is listen to, YouTube clips or downstream and all this kind of stuff. But we get our news a lot. By tuning in the different networks, all of them have their YouTube videos. You know, they're all up or streaming or whatever. And I'm just amazed at how much when you tune in and watch it, like we do. We have a certain designated time of the day when we can watch a bunch of different, you know, to see what happened that day and to see the news. I'm amazed at how much the common denominator is make people afraid. Make them afraid, make them fear. And it's just a terrible, terrible thing, but that's what's going on.
Well, that's always been true biblically too, is mm-hmm. that, you know, if you don't behave the way we are telling you to, God will harm you.
Yeah. There's a wonderful text found in 1 John that may have had some Gnostic backgrounds, that when he talks about fear and when he says that wonderful verse, perfect love casts out fear. And that is the only thing we can use. We're not going to go against the fear that's haunting our world today. We're not going to go against it with facts and logic. It's not going to work. We're not going to convince people. The only thing we can do is love. And love is in very short supply, very short supply nowadays.
But I think people should look within themselves.
Oh, that's where they're going to find it, right?
Well, not only for love,
mm-hmm.
but look, because love is oneness, okay? So if we mm-hmm. go in to our oneness, we can go into our higher nature, our higher mind, and use instinct, intuition,
yeah.
But use it to try to unlock, you know, the sense of freedom,
yes,
of thought,
yes.
and what feels true versus mm-hmm. what feels that it comes from fear.
Yeah, yeah, and this is an old idea that people have been fighting for a long time. 2,500 years ago, Plato in the Timaeus wrote about what he called as the downfall of the Atlantis culture. I call it the Atlantis tradition. Whether or not you believe in a historical Atlantis and whether you not believe it historically the way Plato described it, I think there's a kernel of truth at the bottom of it, but many people don't. But Plato was certainly using that story of Atlantis for a purpose. It was a myth. It was a metaphor, and he was trying to teach something. And he said in the Timaeus that for many generations, the citizens of Atlantis obeyed the laws and loved the divine to which they were akin. And they reckoned that qualities of character were far more important than their present prosperity. What a line for today, right? Qualities of character are far more important than prosperity. So he said they bore the burden of their wealth and possessions lightly and did not let their high standard of living intoxicate them or make them lose their self-control. And then he said the magic words, but when the divine element in them became weakened and their human traits became predominant, they ceased to be able to carry their prosperity with moderation. Wow. He said those words 2,500 years ago, and they could just as well be found in the headlines of the New York Times today, you know?
I think we need to look at leaders and listen to their language of, you know, about fear, about, you know, limitation, about and new rules and yeah. All these ways that society is now being controlled, mm-hmm. and try to hear it in a way that doesn't frighten us even more.
Yeah, yeah. We don't hear that. Just today, I was listening to the latest back and forth between Republicans and Democrats in Congress. And it wasn't just saying, as it used to be said, oh, my colleague has different ideas. No, they're calling each other the basest of names and just absolutely trying to ridicule and destroy. You see the same thing on some news programs where they're using quotes way out of context just to make somebody appear foolish or stupid or something like that. That's fear. You're absolutely right. That's fear. And the only way to overcome that is we have to somehow get beyond it to see we're all in this boat together.
And I want to look at what happened to Judas. Judas was, considered a traitor, but now there's. You've read the Gospel of Judas, I
presume. Yes, that's right.
And Judas really meant well, but he wasn't liked because he went up against the grain of the authority, and they certainly had to turn him into a bad guy. Well, what is happening now all over the place? How many Judases do there have to be?
It was funny back in the 60s, late 60s, I guess it was, when the rock musical Jesus Christ Superstar came out. So many people just hated it, and religious people hated it. And it wasn't just because they were using rock music and time signatures that weren't normal, like 5/4 and 7/4 and all that kind of stuff. But the whole idea of Jesus Christ Superstar was that Judas came out almost a hero, acting on what he believed in. And when you read the Gospels in that way, it puts a whole different light on it. You know, if Jesus saw Judas as an enemy, why did he trust him with the money? Why was he the money keeper in the group? Why was he sent out when Jesus said, "What thou doest, do as quickly." It was almost as if they were all caught up in something much bigger than them.
We need to have more of a discussion of that.
Yeah,
in the future, because we're getting near the end of the show. But I really want to get more spiritually involved in the nature of life, and how we can use, you know, the origins of religions, for instance, and work with the essence of what their original purpose was before they were distorted.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because that's the story of my life right there. I mean, I was an institutional ordained pastor of a church for 40 years. When I retired and came out here to the woods to live in South Carolina, living out here in the woods, it was supposed to be a spiritual retreat for us. We were coming out here to get away from all of that because we wanted to confront the essential spirituality that I had been preaching about my whole life. But because I had been preaching about it within a certain context, it wasn't as powerful in me as I thought it should be. And I wanted to come out here away from rules and regulations. You know, God, you and me, 24 hours a day, you know, you say you want a battle, bring it on, you know. And that's when my life took a great turn 12 years ago toward a much more spiritual, principled life. And it didn't come through Christianity and the rules and the doctrines and the dogmas and the intellectual understanding of Christian theology, even though I still consider myself a Christian. Now there are a lot of Christians who don't consider me a Christian anymore, but it took getting away from that to understand. And now, having confronted that essential spirituality and having had my prayer answered, so to speak, I will not let you go until you bless me. Having had that prayer answered, I can now take that newfound understanding, which is probably much closer to a shamanistic understanding than anything else, but I can take that back into Christianity. I can take that back into Judaism. I can take it back into Hinduism, the religions that I used to teach about.
Yeah, maybe that's our future.
Oh, I hope so. I think it has to be. I think we're standing right at a crossroads right now. We have to make a decision. Which way are we going to go?
Well, I agree. And we will talk more.
Great.
Willis, thank you. Your new book is Censoring God. And you have a website?
Yes, people can find out about Censoring God, or they can get in touch with me, which I really love. You know, you and I can talk, but we don't know who's listening. And on my website, there is a contact page, so people can write me and we can carry on conversations. It's www.jimwillis.net. And that will also give you links to my Facebook page and my YouTube page, jimwillis.net. And hope to hear from everybody there.
That's great. Jim, thanks again for being on Energy Stew, as I've thanked you many times before.
And, thank you, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, H-E-A-R-T, river.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.